Log Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder, and we're speaking about the Billy Meier case this evening. Billy Meier is about an 80-year-old man. He lives in a tiny mountain village in Switzerland called Hinterschmidt-Rudi, which is maybe 40 minutes to 50-some minutes from Zurich. He grew up in northern Switzerland in a place called Bulach near a town called Niederflux. And Billy, as a young boy, had some very interesting experiences. One of which was a kind of a revelation when he crawled out a lower bedroom in his window. It was a mild night in May in about 1941, and he sat down outside and he looked up at the beautiful starry sky and he heard a voice in his head that said, "My life is made out of the love of creation." And a few minutes later, he heard his own voice again say, "Since ancient times, you've lived among the stars." So young Edward was having a very interesting experience that night. He would write it down many years later in an article called How It All Began. And Billy talks about impulses that came from what he later would learn were the storage banks. And he remembered that what his mission on the earth was, and he had good memories that penetrated him and showed him the way to live. And he saw the light that the stars emitted, but he recognized that there was a light outside of the visible spectrum that he called the love of creation. And creation is identical to the notion of universal consciousness. Now, the universe that we live in has both an internal and external body. And Schöpfung is the German word for creation. Everything that exists in the whole universe is a manifestation of the might and this true love of the universal consciousness. Our physical universe exists only in one layer or one belt of our creation. There are actually seven rotating belts that counter-rotate against one another. And the incredible splendor that we see in nature is the visible expression of the love of creation. And love is the highest principle, the highest creational natural law, also known as effective love. Love is the highest principle in all creation, and through it, everything exists in absolute logic. Well, there's also another law of creation called the law of striving, which requires that every living thing evolves, that it works, that it continually strives to better itself. And that's really the key to happiness, is continuing your striving and following also the third creational law, which is the law of harmony, which means that we, as we strive, need to keep a neutral, positive thought form. And because the universal consciousness is neutral, positive in the way it thinks. And there's something called the creational spirit energy, which interweaves throughout the entire universe. And the entire universe is laced with this energy. This energy has an intelligence of its own. But the wording of intelligence should not be thought of as being the intelligence of a human being. the intelligence of the creational spiritual energy, this intelligence brings forth life forms. It brings forth matter. This spirit energy exists in all life forms, in human beings, in animals, in plants, all creatures, including microbes, bacteria, viruses. And get this, this spirit energy also exists in rocks, stones, sand, and water, gases. And this is important. I mean, this is why the Meyer material refers to the universal consciousness as a Wesenheiten. And a Wesenheiten in the German is a creature, maybe creature is not the right word, it's a life form that's enlivened by this spirit energy that doesn't necessarily have the self-determined possibility to change its evolution, to speed up its evolution. In other words, the creation evolves according to a set pattern. And the human being, through its own free will, can strive harder, evolve faster, or not. So there's something called the Schöpfung Geisten Erge, terrible pronunciation, I'm sure, which is this creational spiritual energy. And it exists in everything. It, in the human being, after the human being dies, this creation spiritual energy still exists in the body for about 3 or 4 hours. And that's why that organs can be harvested during that time. So it helps to understand what this creational spiritual energy is, because literally this is the intelligence, the universal consciousness in our universe. It's neither good nor evil. It creates universes out of its own goal of evolution. It builds universes as a part of its own evolution. It creates human spirit forms to help it with its own evolution. It's not a heavenly father. For example, two men are sitting on a fault line, and the earthquake happens. Those guys fall in the hole and are killed. I don't know. I should have looked it up. How many people starve to death every day? Which is another important question, which is an indication of our overpopulation. But for example, 4 million people are born on the street and die on the street in India every year. But the universal consciousness doesn't stop this starvation. For example, 10 million children die every year from starvation and starvation-related diseases. And I think the reason the universal intelligence doesn't stop or doesn't intervene and stop 10 million children dying every year from starvation is because not only is it a neutral kind of energy, but it doesn't interfere in the law of striving. And since we have many, many lifetimes, if it intervened and saved people under certain circumstances, it might restrict their evolution, which was the whole purpose of those individuals being here. So hopefully that makes a little bit of sense. I think the concept of the spirit energy helped open some doors for me in terms of my understanding. I also want to talk a little bit about the conscious mind, the unconscious mind, and the subconscious mind. And maybe we'll go into this in a little more detail later in the show, but the unconscious mind is kind of like a secretary to the conscious mind. It handles things that are originally introduced to the mind, and it processes things incredibly fast. The unconscious mind is so much faster than the conscious mind. For example, if you put your hand on a hot stove, the unconscious mind is what pulls that hand back. And you can end up pulling your hand back quicker than your conscious mind is aware of at all. In the case that your brain is dealing with information that's new or very profound, what happens is the unconscious mind calls on the subconscious to handle the deeper information, and the two work together. We'll get into more of this a little bit later. But this is a very interesting aspect of how the mind works. We have something called the Geist form, which is the spirit form, which resides in the middle of the brain, in an area called the superior colliculus. It's the part of us that never dies. Semyasi Billy's Third Contact called it the wonder of all wonders. She said that every person has a spirit form. It records all of our thoughts, all of our emotions. It will even tell us if our thinking is wrong, if we've learned to pay attention to it. The spirit form is a tiny fragment of the universal consciousness that I was talking about before. It cannot be harmed by anything in the physical world. It's completely invulnerable. It has a center area called the gamut, which controls the thoughts and the feelings of the spiritual consciousness. The spirit form does have thoughts and feelings, but it is not as conscious as the material consciousness. The material consciousness is where you do your thinking and your decision making. Anything creative comes through the material consciousness. The spiritual consciousness is focusing on recording things. It's focused on absorbing neutral, positive energy. One of its jobs is also to send impulses to the material consciousness. You see, the spiritual consciousness has information from previous lives and deeper understandings, and those sorts of things. So this impulsation goes on. The spirit form comes into the body of a child at 21 days. After the sperm fertilizes the egg, the spirit form comes in. The spirit is no larger than a needlepoint. It has an enormous energy that spreads throughout the entire body. As I was saying earlier, after you die, the spirit energy stays there for about three hours, and body parts can be used in organ donation in that time. But eventually, the nature will absorb that spirit energy in about 3 hours. And the spiritual consciousness is, and our impulses and swinging waves, in much the same metaphorical likeness as of electricity, as a power to machines or a light bulb. That's one way to think of the spirit form. The German term Bewusstsein is consciousness, in the quality or state of being aware of an external object or something within oneself. It has been defined as sentience before, awareness, subjectivity, the ability to experience or to feel. Wakefulness, having a sense of self, despite the difficulty in that definition, many philosophers believe there is a broadly shared notion about what consciousness is. Bewusstlosigkeit is unconsciousness, and the part of the psyche lying before the consciousness. Remember, the unconscious is before the conscious. It brings in information, processes it with incredible rate of speed, and then eventually that information goes to the conscious mind. The unconscious can be comparatively understood as something like a, like I said, a clerical assistant coming before the consciousness in the chain of this information processing. That this means that when the unconscious instantaneous perceptions are made, the unconscious, in an imperceptible way to us human beings, connects in a communicating way with the deeper level subconsciousness. If the information is deeper and it'll work, the unconscious will start to work with the subconscious on a problem or on understanding something. I've talked about the gamut tonight, and the gamut is the spiritual counterpart of the psyche. The psyche controls the thoughts and the feelings of the material consciousness. The gamut controls the thoughts and the feelings of the spiritual consciousness. The psyche controls or organizes the thoughts and the feelings, and from the psyche comes the state of a negative or a positive mood, the atmosphere of inner attitude. Empfinden is a block or factor, a process. The Empfinden is a process of the gemut, and the Empfinden is a fine spiritual perception that senses this radiating love from a creation. It senses this spirit energy. You know, if you go out into the forest, and you listen, you can hear the sound of the animals, the birds, and the insects. And if you watch the birds fly, they move together. And I wonder often if they're connected by what are called these swinging waves, and that's talked about in the Meyer material. It says rivers, stones, plants, bushes, trees, everything that crawls and flies on the earth is a life form with a spirit form. And these spirit forms are on a journey through time, which involves many, many lifetimes. And death is just a passage into the world of pure spirit. And this is a cycle that continues. It's one of the laws of nature, one of the creational natural laws, which is reincarnation. And most spirit forms on the earth, most earth humans have a spirit form about 4 million years old. So you've been reincarnating into a physical body for at least 4 million years. At this point, our consciousness is blocked, generally speaking, from those memories because it would be too confusing to deal with the pain and the grief and the problems of a previous life. And it's important that each lifetime your consciousness is focused on what it is currently doing. Now, at the fifth stage of evolution, we get to what's called the age of recognition. And we can recognize and remember those previous lives. And recognizing those previous lives is a blessing in many ways. So we're on a path of evolution, and we're currently in what's called the second stage. The first stage is primitive. The second stage is called rational life. The third stage is intelligent life. The fourth stage is called real life. And at the fourth stage, we're true space travelers. Civilizations, human civilizations, can travel with almost no time, passing from star to star. We start to become very advanced genetic engineers. We can create life. We can create sentient life, which is even stranger. Now, Semyasi's ship, for example, had a biological central computer that was sentient. It was aware. She could communicate with it telepathically. For all sense and purpose, it was a living machine with a metallic hull. So, and this is what's done at the fourth stage of evolution. And there's a stage, there are stages beyond that. In the fifth stage, it's called life and creational wisdom. That's when you remember your previous lifetimes. People at this stage are also given the title of King of Wisdom if they earn it. King of Wisdom, a JHWH. This is the last stage before human beings become what's called the stage of, it's like a stage where we're half physical and half spiritual. I think it lasts something like 50 million years. And then we become completely spiritual again. We don't need a physical body. And then we enter into kind of a spiritual plane at this point. It is called Arahat Athrasada, and you've probably heard Billy talk about Arahat Athrasada before. It's the first spiritual level. And at the level of Arahat Athrasada, we have no physical body, and we'll move up through six more levels after that. And at the Patali level, we're done at the Patali level. And that takes 2.9 billion years to get to. And at that point, we do what's called merging back with creation. So this is the seven steps of human evolution. I wanted to read the quick Arahat Athrasada. If I don't knock my headset off, Arahat Athrasada overpopulation excerpt here. That'll, I think, be interesting. In the middle of earthly events, the human stands with the globally highest spirit form. He has all the things of this world to place into order and to value them according to the all-encompassing unitary law of creational order, recognizable in all earthly laws of nature. As an individual, the human has various tasks to which he is responsible. As first, he is responsible to the task of preserving his life for the duration of his developmentally given time. The second, he has to pay heed to the fulfillment of the duty to further develop himself spiritually and consciously in the best way, and to acknowledge the spiritual evolution as an important truth. As a community creature, he is responsible for the task of preserving his species and to instruct and educate his offspring in the meaning of the spiritual teachings. But further, the task is imposed on him to align, integrate himself into a naturally ordered community, which does likewise guarantee an evolution in every regard, as nature visibly and livingly exemplifies. The preservation of the human species is not based on a formula of simple propagation. As such, the erroneous teachings of earthly religions proclaim, the preservation of the species is based on the compliance with the following natural laws. As such, the compliance is in holiness, therefore monitoring, supervising, and controlling. But the formula of the simple propagation is unholy. Therefore, without monitoring, without supervising, without regarding, and uncontrolling, because it generates propagation in a senseless multitude and is contrary to all natural laws. That the human of the earth renders the compliance of this simple propagation and disregards all creational laws is recognizable for every human who moves himself even slightly on a consciousness-related developmental pathway. Boundless and without stopping, the human augments itself and procreates offspring in an uncontrollable, unholy form. While your earth is able to carry and nourish 500 million human beings, the earth human begot, well now close to 9 billion humans, and is impelled in only a few centuries of such an evil overpopulation that millions will have to die an abnormal death. And that was what I was talking about earlier. Let me look again and see if I still have that up. How many people? 10 million children die every year from starvation and starvation-related diseases. 10 million every year. That's quite a lot. Through irrationality and religious and erroneous teachings of the earth human, the mass of the humanity was driven into boundlessness, through which those problems that were restricted to a few humans and containable have spread into a nameless mass and became uncontrollable. And so, with the reckoning and disregard of the law of preservation of the species, in only a few centuries, humanity was driven into a mass of overpopulation and inevitably rose all the problems and hardships and degenerations with it. When the earth human lives in the right sense, in the fulfillment of his task, he then lives in the order given by creation. As he disregards this order and steps out of it, then he has to taste and bear the consequences. But the human of earth has stepped on this order with his feet and grossly disregarded, and now he has to bear the consequences of this. As one of the most important duties of the material life domain of earthly humanity, it is to heed that the overpopulation is contained in the strongest measure, and the number of human beings in this state should only be 500 million. So this is a fascinating little paper, very controversial. I know most people look at population and they say, well, there's all this space. Well, the problem is the Earth has much space, but not all of it is what we would call true living space. Because, for example, in the South Pole area, Antarctica, there's about 6.5 or more million square miles, depending on how you look at the ice and what time you look at the ice. But no one really wants to live there. It's just too cold. People move to the moderate areas where there is water. And when they do this, they typically destroy the forests. Now, the forests should exist in a state of massiveness everywhere. This is what keeps the planet healthy. The forests moderate the weather. In the summer, they produce the shade that keeps the ground cool, that slows the storms down. In the winter, they absorb the heat instead of having it reflect all back. The trees absorb the heat. Now, they also cause turbulence when wind blows, and when the turbulence raises above the trees, it tends to form clouds. And then the clouds lead to rain, and rain leads to the health of the forest. So it's a self-sustaining system. It also produces a tremendous amount of oxygen. So we should have these gigantic forests. Instead, our forests are being cut down all the time. And for example, Bangladesh, the country the size of Iowa, has 167 million, I've heard 145 to 160 million people. That's more than people live in Russia. It's astonishing. If you go to India, like I said earlier, 4 million people are born on the street and die on the street every year. 8 million people starve to death every year. We have 9,000 newborns per hour. Think about that. The world population grows by 77 million people annually. This is completely unsustainable. There is in Beijing, which has 14 million people, one city in China, more people than are in all of Ohio. They have 50 lanes of traffic that go one direction. You can see it on the internet. I didn't believe it until I saw it. The air pollution is so bad that during the day, it looks like night in the middle of the city because there's so much pollution. This is what overpopulation brings. All of the evils of society that we have today. So in any case, overpopulation is our biggest issue. And I'm glad at least I did bring it up tonight. Depressions. Let's talk a little bit about what it means. Sometimes when we let our thoughts run away from us, they run in a cyclic rotating pattern that tends to flatten our feelings. And what I would say flattening of the feelings means, Billy didn't quite define it, I don't think, but it means, I guess, that there are no highs anymore. It's just all flat. Depressions are based on these acquired flattened feelings. And this is determined by conscious and unconscious negative thinking. We actually have unconscious thoughts. If negative thinking occurs or deepens, it's unavoidable that it will push all positive thinking out. Positive thinking is something that we have to learn. We're focusing on neutral positive thinking. Now, depression leads to aversion towards activity. Any activity. We just don't do anything when we're depressed. Strong thoughts, which are imprinted with feelings, have, for human beings that live with them, a profound significance. So a lot of times these thoughts that we have are imprinted with feelings, and these are complex thoughts. They're structures, and they're hard to influence. And if they're negative structures, we have problems. So unconscious thoughts are often automatic, which is very dangerous. And as I was saying earlier, our unconsciousness is like a secretary or a clerical assistant. It's the first step in the chain of processing of information. It autonomously takes in and sorts incoming perceptions, impulses. And then if necessary, it moves it on to the consciousness. If it's something deep, it moves it into the subconscious so that the subconscious can try to sort it out. So how does the unconscious mind affect us? Sometimes we can become deceivers of ourselves. And that happened during the time when the Giza intelligences were here. We very much became deceivers of ourselves. One of the biggest problems we have are automatic thoughts, problem-causing thoughts that tend to narrow our frame of reference, that tend to repeat and operate automatically, and they create these pathways in our brain. And unconsciously, we repeat these thoughts, and we repeat them over and over and over. They turn the psyche into turmoil. These are automatic thoughts. They're very, very difficult to break out of. And this is what makes people literally crazy. It makes people distort reality. That's another thing. In terms of self-healing, we have to determine where we are distorting reality. And when we get into negative thoughts, there will be some kind of distortion of reality. Now, if you can't tell, sometimes you can't tell if you're in negative thoughts. If you're thinking correctly, you will have harmony in your psyche. It'll feel good, believe me. There'll be a lack of conflict in your psyche. If you have lower thoughts and the lower feelings associated with them, you'll have bad habits that start to form, and your circumstances will get worse in your life, and you'll say things to people that you shouldn't say, you'll do things you shouldn't do, you'll have errors of judgment, you'll have grief. This can lead to suffering. So it can create bad habits that you can't stop doing. Now your body starts to react to the kind of thoughts that you're having. So if you have negative thoughts, it will negatively affect your health and your body. If you have really good neutral positive thoughts, not ridiculously positive, too positive thinking is unbalanced, and it leads to depression as well, because eventually any imbalance leads to a bad state. Let's talk a little bit about synapses and learning. Old habits are hard to break, and we create what are called neuropathways in our brain that are thought structures in our brain, and we'll go back to these thought structures and repeat negative thoughts. You know what happens, though? If you can build healthy, neutral, positive thought structures in your brain, you can go back to those thought structures and start repeating good thoughts, good feelings, and it brings a light to your whole psyche. It's absolutely very, very nice. I recommend people to find harmonious music with good melody. Sometimes music that's relaxing is good for that too. And allow that music to play. A lot of times with a minimum of vocals. Some vocal music is still good. But if you'll do that, let that go into your subconscious and your unconscious, and focus on some other task, that will release sometimes turmoils that are in your subconscious and your unconscious, and free your conscious mind. It really has a very good effect. But if you nurture these pessimistic, bad, negative thoughts, you'll have bad, negative, pessimistic feelings, and eventually your body will be influenced. It's true, optimists live longer. People with a neutral, positive attitude have a lower chance of heart attack. Learning the thinking skills of the mind of thoughts is part of your staying alive. That's how critical this is. So, in any case, I wanted to cover those topics tonight. I think they're very, very important related to our thinking. Again, Contact Report 544 says 2020 begins the possible collapse of the United States. When Billy was on the Great Mothership in 1975, Ptah told him right around 2020 the United States could very much start to fall apart, and it has to do with the felonies that our presidents have committed, our trillions of dollars of debt, and many, many other things. Our solar system does have a binary star. And this is another thing Billy learned on the Great Mothership in 1975. Billy got to see the dark star. And this dark star is a binary system. Our solar system is a binary system. The dark star is beyond what's called the Oort cloud. And after the planets, the main planets, I think after Uranus, you start to get into the Oort cloud, the beginnings of the Oort cloud. There's a disc-shaped inner Oort cloud and a spherical outer Oort cloud. And then this Oort cloud is this extended shell of icy objects. There's about 50,000 to 200,000 AU from the sun is this Oort cloud and these icy planetesimals there. This dark star, dark planet out there is making changes to our Oort cloud. The dark star is about 10 times smaller than our star and has planets orbiting around it. So the two star system, the rotation is equivalent to about a light year. Now, this dark star is starting to hurl structures out of the Oort cloud, and a very long chain of meteors are being catapulted into the inner solar system. And we're starting to see these meteors from the Oort cloud showing up in our skies. Okay, let me switch. I'm going to hit a lot of different topics here. The danger of trans fats. Trans fats are in things like potato chips, french fries. They can cause your stomach to hurt. It can cause bloating, but it gives you harmful LDL cholesterol levels will start to rise. It causes the hardening of the arteries. And this is caused by these artificial fatty acids. They're created by an industrial process that adds hydrogen to liquid vegetable oils. And this is really unhealthy for us. It can be one of the reasons. If you're eating trans fats and you're wondering why are you feeling bloated, include foods like biscuits, burgers, popcorns, cheese products, some cheese products. It can be because of the trans fats. Stay away from that. Next topic. I'm hitting a lot of topics today. We've talked about some of these before, but I thought it would be good to cover some more of this again. Agharta. Agharta is the blue-skinned people. Billy was in the Himalayas, and he was in India for a while. He saw these blue-skinned people, particularly in the vicinity of Shigatse and Shambhala, is what is called the underground realm of Agharta. It's in what's called Shigatse is in the autonomous region of China, the Tibetan autonomous region of China. Shigatse is also sometimes called the gateway to Mount Everest. It's north of India, south of Tibet. The city of Shigatse, and of course Agharta itself, is said to be controlled by a race of people called the Sons of the Sun. And they are another group that's focused on world domination, just like our religions and secret societies. The Pleiaren cannot speak about it any more than that. Now, Agharta is discussed in Contact Report 70 in an event that occurs some 11,000 years ago. And let me read this quickly. It says, named after Aris II, the India of today was at that time called Aryan, which, however, split off from Hyperborea, and after a few centuries, 210 years, it joined itself with the inhabitants of Mu and Agharta, While from Hyperborea, Eris, the first constantly troubled new and greater Atlantis by certain war activities. Billy has never spoken with the Blueskin people, although he says he has seen them during his travels. Enough of that. Let me talk about Adolf Hitler. Adolf Hitler was destined to become a great leader. He was impulsed by the Panzerfaust at a young age. He was supposed to be a very benevolent leader. And in many ways, he was much more benevolent than our history paints him as being. When the Germans attacked Poland, they were doing that because thousands of German people were being brutally massacred in Poland, but you never hear about that. Hitler also offered peace to Winston Churchill many, many times, and he never took him up on it. Churchill, by the way, was a terrible drunk, and so bad he couldn't even hardly give public speeches. And his addresses on the radio were often done by actors. But anyway, Popes Pius the 11th and the 12th made deals with Hitler, and this is after Hitler went bad. Remember, Hitler was impulsed by the Giza intelligences, which are these human beings on the earth, human beings that were extraterrestrials that existed far below the Giza plateau. They used religion very much to like mind control the earth people. They had a kind of technology called telenotic impulses, which would put us kind of in a hypnotic state. It still affects us today, even though the Giza intelligences are no longer on the planet. Billy got to see the Giza intelligences in the middle 50s when a woman named Askett, one of his extraterrestrial mentors, who mentored Billy for about 11 years, took Billy far below the Giza Plateau, when Billy was about 16 years old. He saw the headquarters of the Giza Intelligences, an ancient spacecraft, underground. He saw smaller craft. He saw their guards. He also saw like a raised platform in the right, to the right of where he was standing, and that had a crown of thorns and what looked like the cross from the crucifixion, and a pouch with like valuable coins in it, that sort of things, and valuable stones. And these were perfect replicas of the crucifixion materials. And this would have been used to, again, create another religious situation that these Giza intelligences could use to manipulate the people of the earth. But anyway, I'm talking about Adolf Hitler and the Holy See. And the Holy See is part of this hierarchy in Rome. These popes that work with Hitler, and this is at the point of when Hitler had gone negative. He was heavily influenced by an individual named Hermann Steinschneider, who was in the Thule Society and also being influenced by these extraterrestrial humans called the Giza Intelligences. Hermann Steinschneider was known as Erik Jonassen during that time. But that's enough on Hitler and the Holy See. There's a planet, I was talking about overpopulation earlier, there's a planet called Eckhart, which is mentioned in Contact Report 476. It was an Earth-sized planet which was destroyed. In 1975, there were 23 billion people that lived there. It was in the Proxima Centauri system, not in our space-time configuration, but in the Pleiaren space-time configuration. These people had some very advanced technologies compared to the Earth people anyway. Eventually, the population of a cart increased to 39 billion. And then the climate was completely destroyed. There was an oxygen collapse that occurred, and the atmosphere was lost on the planet. The plowing, we're only able to get 116 million people off the planet before the atmosphere collapsed, and billions of people, nearly 39 billion people died. Next topic, I'm running through some very quick topics. The dangers of something called cyclamate. And this is one of our sweeteners that we use today. The Playaren recommend that we stay away from various kinds of sweeteners, especially anything had to do with cyclamate. It's very detrimental to the health. It can promote weight gain through increased appetite. It negatively affects intestinal functions to a degree. Often in the intestines, it will convert into something called cyclohexylamine, which is a poison, which leads to high blood pressure, causes damage to sperm cells, impotence can be caused by it. Moreover, sweeteners of the form produce a carcinogenic effect in men and women as well as animals. I talked about the Giza Intelligence's very few moments ago. His Giza Intelligence was named Jehave. He was the third born son of Eris the Barbarian. Eris the Barbarian was the leader of these people that came from Beta Centauri. They first went to the North Polar region, which was called Hyperborea, a very beautiful area at that time, very warm, believe it or not. During that period in Earth's history, the North Pole region, the Arctic, was a place of summer all of the time. There were palm trees and fruit trees and all kinds of animals. But Eris the Barbarian and his entourage of extraterrestrial humans took over Hyperborea. Jehave, his third-born son, at some point took over after Eris the Barbarian died. Jehave was murdered by Erisane. And this has occurred 340 years after Jehave came into power. This was many, many years after the life of Eris the Barbarian. These people lived for quite some time in the early days, but as time went on, the Giza Intelligence's lifespan shortened and got shorter and shorter. Erisane, after he murdered his father, Jehave, he was exiled by Ptah and Salem. And he returned after his exile, returned to Earth, and he was the one that created the base beneath the Giza pyramids. He created what we call the Giza Intelligences. At this time, Ptah and Salem, his brothers, went to Hyperborea, and they ruled with wisdom and kindness and justice. Erisane created kind of a religious cult. He created religious teachings, and his strategy to gain power on the earth, he wanted to subjugate all life on earth to him. And he created these religious cultic teachings, which really would take away people's inner freedom so that they would not grow in their consciousness. And the gypsies along the Nile and the Mediterranean adhered to his teachings very intensely. He had emissaries. Erisane had emissaries who had succumbed to his teachings and became followers of this false teaching. Again, Erisane's goal was to subordinate all of the Earth humans to his kind of cultic teaching. He was eventually ousted by his nephew, who was called Hen. He was also known as Jehovah in the tongues of the what the Meyer material refers to, the Hebrons. This occurred around 3000 BC. Jehovah is called the God of the Old Testament. And it's said that he destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. The Meyer material said he used a small nuclear weapon to do that. And there were some other things involved in the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah, one of which was a meteor. And I think there was an earthquake involved as well. Anyway, I really enjoyed tonight's show. Covered a lot of material, some of which was brand new, and some of which I enjoy going over again because it allows me to learn this better. You've been listening to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. And we will probably be back tomorrow to talk about more of the Meyer material. I hope you're enjoying these shows. We've had some really good turnout on some of the shows. Sheldon's show on the 12th was humongous. That was a lot of fun, and we hope to see you tomorrow. Have a great evening. You've been listening to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. Have a great day and evening. Bye-bye.